It is Friday, and the Houston Astros are not very good.
We are going to talk about it because, again, let's say that again. The Houston Astros are not very good. That will be the first half of our show, and then it's Friday, so we are going to give you the good, the bad, the ugly. Baseball Barbacast starts now.
Now.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows that one day the MLB draft will also have 275,000 people attending it. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and there is something so humbling about watching the NFL draft as someone who covers baseball. It is a great reminder that our thing matters oh so little in the scale of the behemoth that is football, but yet we continue to appreciate the thing we love. Jordan, how are you doing on this Friday morning?
I'm great. Yeah, no, I, as of course the number one MLB draft fan, it is always funny to watch other drafts treated in the way that they are, but it's fine. It's okay. We all have our thing, and I know it was a big night for the football fans, but we are not, we have nothing to say about Caleb Williams. I wish him the best being on the Chicago Bears, but that's all I have for you on that. We're going to talk about baseball. We're going to talk about the Houston Astros, Jake. They're just bad. They're a bad at this point. It's not like, oh, they're a good team playing bad. They might be bad. They might be a bad team. That is going to be our first main topic because it just is so. It is a really staggering thing to look at in the standings and see at the end of April, the Houston Astros 3 games behind the Oakland A's, among other things. They are comfortably joined the bottom of the league. I mean, Jake, you know, coming into this season, we were like, all right, so here are the really bad teams, right? It's the Rockies. It's the White Sox. We found out pretty quickly it would be the Marlins.
Yeah.
You know, the A's are 10-16. They are the fifth worst record in baseball. And then there are the Houston Astros. The
what's
pinnacle
the record
of success?
What's the record?
They are 7-19. Their worst record since 1969. Jake, where would you like to begin? As we start to and listen, we've already talked about this a few times, but they just got swept by the Cubs, and yeah. Now they're heading to Mexico City, where they're going to have to continue to, you know, not embarrass themselves even against another one of the worst teams in the Rockies. Where do you want to start here?
So today is going to be on this baseball internet dunk on the Astros day, because this feels like if it turns around, it has to be the bottom, right? Like, if it's going to turn around, they're getting kind of decently close to the you can't turn around anymore point. And so it feels like the right time to really dig into this. And what I want to do today, Jordan, is try and understand what has gone wrong. Try and understand where the Astros go from here if it's this bad. And think about all those various repercussions it could have for baseball, like as a thing this season. Do guys get traded? Do guys resign? Do guys leave in free agent? Like, all of this stuff I think is fascinating. And the Astros have just been such a, like, an inevitability for as long as really we can remember, mm-hmm. dating back to, I guess, 2015, 2017, like when we were in college, right? Like, they mm-hmm. have been there. They have been mm-hmm. an inevitable victory dance in October. And they just look so vulnerable now, in a way that is really hard to fathom. So I think what I would like to do, Jordan, is just to get into the nitty gritty of it a little bit, right? So this early in the season, who you've played, I think, makes something of a difference. So I just want to quickly run through that. The Astros have played four against the Yankees. Then they played three against the Blue Jays, who are also pretty, look pretty good. Four against the Rangers, who won the World Series. Three against the Royals, who were like better than we thought. Another one against, like three against the Rangers. Three against the Braves. Three against the Nats. Three against the Cubs. So I would say that relatively, it's been a slightly above average hard schedule, right? They haven't gotten the White Sox alley-oop. They've yet to be gifted games against either the Angels or the A's, the traditional, you know, whipping boys that they have in the division. And I'm not trying to excuse how horrible they've been, but they've played some pretty good baseball teams, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to get a little bit easier as the season goes on. So why then are they 7-19? Okay, what about the roster and their performance has allowed them, enabled them to get to this point? What stands out for you?
Yeah, I mean, you gotta start with the pitching. I think we pointed this out a couple, maybe earlier this week or last week. But even though you look at their offense and they have a 112 team OPS plus, and that's currently ranks sixth in baseball, the pitching is currently last or tied with the White Sox of Chicago, who might be one of the worst teams literally we've ever seen, at a 77 ERA plus. So the 531 ERA is not the bottom. I believe that ranks 27th. But what you're seeing is a complete imbalance and lack of any amount of consistency on the mound. And you say, okay, well, they were really injured, right? They've been really injured. Well, you know who hasn't been injured, Jake, is Brian Abreu. I know he was suspended for a day. Brian Abreu, Josh Hader, and Ryan Pressly. And this bullpen that was unexpectedly brought together when they gave Josh Hader nearly $100 million, even with the innings that they had lost from last year, which was a lot, you looked at that top three and you said, well, how can this go wrong? And I hope that I said this when I've said this a million times. If this isn't what you need, now, listen, do I expect them all to have ERAs over 7 for the rest of the season? No. But again, this is, the bullpen is the bullpen. I don't care what they did last year. I don't care how nasty they are. This is the nature of it. You can have a bad stretch, and a bad stretch at the wrong time with enough else going wrong on the mound, and suddenly you look up and you're 7-19, and you're in a really, really, really bad place. So we all thought Hader, Abreu, Pressly was going to be one of the great relief trios we've ever seen, and not only have they not been good enough, they haven't been good enough while the pitching staff, the starting pitching, has been super hurt or super bad.
So Hader has an 8.38 in 11 appearances. Abreu has a 4.97 in 12 appearances, and Pressly has a 7.45 in 11 appearances. That is unsustainably bad, right? Like, those three guys are better than that. Even if they are worse than what they have been in the past, there's no way that's like their true talent level. Okay, so that has to swing back towards equilibrium at some point. However, what I think is important to understand is I believe that the struggles with the rotation are then elongating the amount of frames that the bullpen needs to cover, which is just taxing guys kind of over the edge and putting too much on the shoulders of the other relievers like Seth Martinez and Taylor Scott, who have like been pretty good, but that then just kind of like pushes everyone up a little bit, right? And creates more bullpen stress. So I actually want to focus on the rotation for a second, right? So Verlander, Justin, not Ben, Verlander hurt to start the year, has only made, I believe, two starts up to this point. And he's been good in both of them, but him being out was bad. Christian Javier was very good across four starts. He is now hurt. Fromber was good across two starts. He is hurt. He has been hurt. He is coming back on Sunday. Okay. Ronel Blanco, who none of us really had ever heard of, you know, except for us, no big deal. Has been sensational in four starts and has been like a miraculous thing for the Astros. If not for Ronel Blanco, they would be in the freaking pits, man. Like, it would be horrible.
I believe they've won. Oh, I guess they lost against the Nats. I was going to say they won all four.
But they're starts. 3-1 but like,
in
his
starts.
One of
their seven wins is a Ronel Blanco no-hitter.
Right.
like that, what? Really? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So all these injuries to the starters, what has this done? This has pushed an unfortunate trio of J.P. France, Hunter Brown, and Spencer Arrighetti into action. Now, this trio, having talked to both J.P. France and Hunter Brown, delightful young men, okay? I wish them nothing but the best in their professional and personal lives moving forward. However, it is unavoidable that in their 13 combined starts, the Astros of Houston are 0-13. Okay, 0-13. They have not won a J.P. France, Hunter Brown, or Spencer Arrighetti start up to this point, okay? J.P. France has a 7-4-6 across five starts. Hunter Brown has a 9-6-8 across five starts. And Spencer Arrighetti has a 10-9-7 across three starts. Now, none of these guys have actually been this bad. And like the peripheral numbers say that they shouldn't have, whatever, blah, 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 blah. The fact of the matter is when these dudes go on the mound, the Astros are going to lose, okay?
And they have so far. Again, that's a pretty incredible. And listen, the injuries are the reason why they're relying on them to this degree, you know?
Right.
But like, still, there was reason for optimism. J.P. France was like a totally solid pitcher last season.
Right.
Hunter Brown, less so, but still very talented.
If any of these dudes were the five, it really wouldn't be a problem. Be like, oh, wow, well, you know, they're showing a lot. Like, maybe they can work through some things. Like, if the rotation... The healthy rotation was Justin Verlander, Hall of Famer. Framber Valdez, healthy, when healthy, like one of the top 10 to 15 pitchers in the world. Mm-hmm. Ronel Blanco, just poof.
Good. He's something. Again, like that's not that shocking because generally the Astros have been good at this.
And Christian Javier is the perpetual breakout guy who threw a no-hitter in the World Series, right? Like those are four pitchers who, if they started postseason games for you, you would be happy. And the problem is that enough of them have been hurt. Not only have they been hurt, but the IL also has Luis Garcia and Lance McCullers Jr., who feels like he hasn't pitched in 85 years. And Jose Urquidy, right? And so it's like they're missing a lot. And I think that is the real reason for all of the Astros' woes because, okay, so here's a stat. They have allowed, I put this on the doc,
yeah. Dude. Like,
they have allowed 30 runs in the first inning of games total, okay? They've played 26 games. So they are averaging more than a run in the first inning. So they are always behind, essentially, right? And like playing from behind like that just creates such a bad atmosphere that filters through everything. Like when you're struggling and you show up to the yard and like you just allow two runs in the first inning, it's like, oh, well, here we go again. By the way, the all-time record for runs allowed in the first inning in a season was 142 runs in a 162 game season by the 2000 Rangers. So there has never been a team to allow to average over one run allowed in the first. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Now maybe they can do that. Probably not over the course of the season, but yeah, I think the biggest issue here is the starting pitching has overtaxed the relievers who have blown 6 of 8 save opportunities. And then, like, that just creates such a bad energy throughout. Do you want to talk a little bit about the offense, though?
Yeah, I mean, the offense, again, is still ranks one of the best in the league. That's really just because Jose Altuve is playing like an MVP again. Tucker's been great. Yordan has been good. It could be even better. They just have a couple total black holes. And unlike, instead of it being Martin Maldonado, now it's Jose Abreu, who is not a defensive wizard behind the plate. And so it's not a very tenable situation to have that guy who you're paying that money be hitting 0-81. And man, it sucks. I mean, he's 37. And when they signed him to that contract, it was like, listen, I love Jose Abreu. We all love Jose Abreu. But this is the kind of profile that when it goes bad so fast. And what we are seeing is essentially the worst case scenario of that timeline. And it's unfortunate because everybody loves Jose Abreu, but that's where they're at. You know, they just called Trey Cabbage back up. Brandon Belt is still sitting out there unsigned. Like Tommy Pham was available. Like Abreu was making this money and they want to see him dig his way out of it. Remember, he was atrocious for much of last season.
Yeah.
Kind of turned it on in the second half, had some moments in the postseason. So I'm sure they're hanging, you know, holding out, but this looks so much worse than last year. And I know he's hitting eighth now. It's not like he's in the middle of their lineup, not driving in, but like that's one thing. But man, you know, you could say, and Bregman has been really
No. We got to talk a little bit more about Abreu.
Okay.
He looks like he's swinging a baseball bat in like underwater in a pool. Yeah. Like the bat speed is just gone. Right. And so what that means is pitchers know the bat speed is gone. And so they're just challenging him in the strike zone. And he can't catch up to stuff. And like, then you're done. Like, you're cooked, right? He is a turducken in a washing machine, Jordan. He's cooked and washed.
Wow.
Cooked and washed.
That's cook disgusting. Him and wash him. That is really a gnarly image, but
and
I appreciate
so it. Are all of Jose Abreu's at bats.
But I would say, though, again, like, he looked really terrible last season. But last season, Alex Bregman was still playing like an all-star. And this year, Alex Bregman has a 566 OPS.
Bad timing.
And that is less good. Now, you could say, it's balanced out. Jeremy Pena has been better than I think we expected. You know, they have a good hitting catcher right now. Yiner Diaz, I know he's had some struggles with runners in scoring position, but still good. Like, there's enough else still going on here that this is still an above-average offense, even if Abreu is the worst hitter in the league, even if Alex Bregman is underwhelming, which I do not think will sustain, unlike Abreu. So, in theory, there's still enough good going on here that if they can remotely get the pitching back on track, they should be in an okay spot. But again, it's about the hole that they are in. And this is where we get to the history of starting 7-19, which according to Brooksgate on Twitter, very fun follow, only two teams that have ever started 7-19 even were above 500 at the end of the season. None of them have made the postseason. So I know earlier this week, you're like, yeah, still picking the Astros to win the division. I mean, we can look at what their playoff odds are on Fangraphs, but that's the thing now. We can look through all the optimistic versions of this, and Fromber's back, and Verlander's back, and Javier isn't actually hurt, and all these guys, and all the bullpen guys start clicking. Yeah, they have the talent to go on a run. A run's going to get you back to, you know, treading water in the American League playoff race, let alone in any sort of commanding position. So that's what is so fascinating about this whole situation and where they go from here.
Yeah, it is quite a lurch. They have dug themselves into, right? Like, I think April is make sure your best players don't get hurt and don't be 10 games out of first place. Oh, whoops. The latter happened to the Astros. Sorry. Yeah. Everyone's relatively healthy on the offensive side, but yikes. I think just one last thing is they've also had a bit of 2024 Padres runners in scoring position disease.
Mm-hmm.
Where
and
like
0-7 in one run games.
Yeah, like they are they should be better than this. Sure. Right? Like I would imagine like their Pythagorean record is okay, so their Pythagorean record is 9-17 instead of 7-19, which sounds like nothing, but it's still a big difference, right? It's still something notable.
I mean, that's just a run differential thing, which has not been good because they're giving up a million runs in the first inning.
I think this is one last thread that we do need to touch on about the Astros and kind of how we got to this point, right? So let's rewind to they bang on some cans.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard about that
far. Yep.
They bang on some cans. I think that's like obviously where this starts, right? Everything with Lunau is like both going perfectly and horribly at the same time. But like the Astros as an organizational apparatus are just humming, right? They're just like really steady. They're like still developing, you know, Kyle Tucker's and Jordan Alvarez's and Christian Javier's. And then so Lunau gets banned or, you know, fired and whatever. They bring in James Click. James Click butts heads with the owner, Jim Crane. James Click leaves like 2 weeks after winning the World Series. And part of that is because Jim Crane starts letting former big leaguers who are not front office experienced people have more say in what's going on for like a decision-making process, right? And that is a trio of Jeff Bagwell, Craig Biggio, and Reggie Jackson, who are all Hall of Famers. Okay, let's be clear. However, they are not Hall of Fame executives, and it appears that this trio has gotten a whole lot of influence in the front office. Biggio and Bagwell, you understand, they're Astros legends. That Reggie Jackson is just like the fourth most influential person in the Astros organization is like its own book.
And it like feels like, yeah, exactly. Like, and that feels like an exaggeration. Two things on this. I think we talked about this on the show. Reg Jackson was interviewed about he was like talking about why they didn't go after Snell, which, you know, as we can see so far was no. Would that have helped or hurt them? Who knows? Whatever. But he basically, when Reg Jackson was interviewed about this, he was saying like, we thought this, we, the people in our decision, we looked at this and this is not something, blah, 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 blah. Reg Jackson, not even listed on the Astros front office official page. Okay. If you go on Astros.com, now Biggio and Bagwell are listed as special advisors, right? Reggie Jackson is just, but he's friends with the owner. And as we know, Jim Crane is as in charge as it like, gets, right?
These guys know more about baseball than Jake Mintz or Jordan Schusterman. They have forgotten more than we will ever know. Right. Let's just be clear about that. We're not trying to say that like these guys are dummies. Yes. However, they are not qualified to run a front office in the year 2024. In the same way that James Click can't hit a fastball and could never hit a fastball. It is a different job, right? There is a reason, I believe, that we have seen fewer and fewer former players become front office people. I think. Like front office, like top executives. That number has gone down. Ton over the last.
Well, it went down and then that's going back up, right? Which is interesting. But again, the generation of the players that we're talking about here is not necessarily who we're seeing making those decisions, like the Bagwell, like the Biggio, like the Reggie Jackson, of course, which is fine. Again, there's value to have these guys around the organization for sure, right? It's not that there shouldn't be. And they exist in every organization. There's former players in every organization.
But what's funny about it to me is that like this has led to some level of organizational decay where the decisions being made by relatively unqualified people is like the Astros as a organization are like worse off than they were 3 years ago. And for Jim Crane to look at this thing that like Lunau and Click had created, and I guess Crane too had created, and be like, you know what the problem is? We don't have enough old school thinkers. It's like, big dog, you made like six consecutive ALCSs and like two World Series. It's like, what do you want? Right. You know? And for them to kind of like slowly tear that down is just so bizarre and so funny to me. And I do actually think that in the context of this season, I'm skeptical how much of an impact that has had on this bad start.
Sure.
Because many of the cast of characters are the same. Now, you could probably say, we don't know, like, how much of a role Bagwell, say, had in signing Abreu or,
the reporting is, like, extremely heavily involved. Like, that one specifically is one that people around, and this is in this story that I'm about to reference here. But again, whether Hader and all that stuff. And listen, Dana Brown is part of this, too. Like, it's not like Dana Brown, like, he's the GM and he's... in theory, making decisions, and I hope he is, right? Of course, right? But so it's all part of it. But I just saw this clip, and the optics here are just incredible, which is basically Jeff Bagwell at a celebrity golf tournament, in front of his golf cart, being asked by the local news, like, hey, dude, so the Astros, like, what's going on? And he gives this quote. Everybody's asking me how I'm doing. I'm miserable. My family and my life are great, but I live it every single day with this team. I'm in the box with these guys. I'm on the mound with these guys.
That's the problem. You're not.
He says from the golf tournament, which is fine, to be clear. Baseball players play golf every day. It's not like they this isn't me being like, get in the room and start grinding tape and get in there. But it's like, are you running this? Like, it's a weird thing. It's just the optics here are so goofy. And I don't know. It's unfortunate because, again, we know there are people that work in this Astros organization that are like trying to do everything that they can. And they have done so much, right? They have acquired all these great players, and there's players that we love seeing succeed in all these things. And so it's possible that, to your point, it is just this cosmic, you know, comeuppance that they're dealing with in these first few weeks, and that's very possible. But the optics of all of it from top to bottom are unfortunate.
Yeah.
And I don't think many people around the league feel too bad.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, right? It's like this entire experience so far has been the meme of showing up to my haters' funeral.
Yeah.
I mean, there are 29 fan bases just having an awesome time with this, just enjoying the heck out of it. You know, and this is the same thing that happened when, like, the Patriots got bad, right?
Yes. Yes, correct.
It was like, this is awesome.
Good
like,
football reference from Jake. Nice.
Heck yeah. Hut, hut. And hike. Okay, so what does this mean moving forward? And then we'll take a break. Okay, so who are the free agents for them at the end of the year? The big one, obviously, is Alex Bregman. Okay? Alex Bregman, who is now represented by Scott Boras, it should be noted. Okay? Alex Bregman is going to hit free agency at the end of this year. Now, we never would have said, could he get traded if the Astros are bad, because we never thought it would be this bad. And we probably never didn't think Alex Bregman would be this bad.
Right.
But if the Astros are out of it in a month and, like, Bregman figures some things out, like, I think they absolutely have to trade him, right?
I think they absolutely have to think. For sure. And I don't know. I mean, maybe that's when, in some ways, you know, you get and really start to get the truth of how badly he wants to stay. And you start to have those conversations, and maybe that's a way to leverage him into being like, do you want to get traded? Do you want to, like, I don't know. I think Bregman is going to be a fascinating character for both of those reasons. The fact that we didn't think the Astros were this bad, we didn't think he would be this bad, all of these things, both of those things have to change, you know, before we can have any idea what's going to happen with him.
But here is where the front office stuff rears its head. Okay. If they are going to trade Alex Bregman, he's probably the only free agent. Like, Ryan Pressly has a vesting option that I imagine he'll hit. Besides that, like, Framber and Tucker are free agents at the end of next season. There's, like, no matter how bad the Astros are this year, that this organization is going to believe that it can win next year, right?
Yes. Yes.
I think that, like, I can't see them trading away guys that are done after next season.
I agree.
Right? But, like, let's say that they do that next year, right? They trade away all these guys next year. Do you trust this front office to hit on the trades?
No.
Like,
again, a lot of other front office questions we get into. The thing that I'm now just thinking about, I mean, listen, the Hader contracts and the Abreu, he's making still $20 million next year, like, all those things, whatever. Justin Verlander, man. Like, what a bizarre situation for him to be in. Remember, he has a player option for next year that vests with only 140 innings this year, which I believe he will get to. However, it might be on a terrible team, which is bizarre. Now, he's going to exercise that option because he's not going to will. I would assume he's going to still take the $35 million for his age 42 season or whatever, guaranteed. Why wouldn't he do that? But that is such a super weird situation when you consider. I saw Petriello was tweeting, just joking about the idea that the Mets could trade back for him since they're already paying for him.
That's
and
so
they're
going
to need him even more, you know, when they're trying to win next year or whatever. So anyway, the point is, it's like Verlander is another fascinating character, especially since he's pulling his weight so far. He's doing what he needs to do. So yeah, it's absolutely wild. And yeah, it is absolutely one of the big stories of the season. And that is why we are treating it as such on this Friday morning.
All right, let's take a quick break. And when we return, we will go 7-19. In our lives, and do a little bit of the good, the bad, and the ugly. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast, Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. You know, Jordan, I like to think of us as, like, we're a 7-19 podcast, but, like, our true value is, like, 9-17. Like, we're two games better than that, you know?
Okay. Our Pythag is, well, I don't know. Like, would you rather our run differential be bad and our record be good, right? The fun differential of the 2021 Mariners. Like, is that more like us? Or do we actually want to have a true quality, good podcast that is underperforming as the record is worse? What do you think? I don't know. Because I think it's more kind of up our alley to, you know, have a negative 28 run differential and be five games over.
Totally agree. We've been playing above our skis ever since we got into this business. And here's a transition. Now we're going to do the good, the bad, and the ugly. Jordan, one thing good, one thing bad, and one thing, Dan, ugly, bizarre, odd, notable.
Yeah.
You want to begin?
So I'll just say there are so much good to choose from this week.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make my good, the original good I was going to do, I'm just going to move it to ugly because it's closer to ugly than good. But we had some great week. I mean, again, we had some sweeps. We got PCA hitting his first homer and his first hit was absolutely tremendous. Is that going to be your good? I bet it is.
Bingo.
I stole it. Okay, sorry. Then actually, you go first then. I just teed it up for you. That's one thing. It is a great pick. Tell us about Pete Crow Armstrong, former podcast
guest. Top prospect for the Chicago Cubs, who I think before yesterday when he got his first hit was the most famous baseball player in the history of the league with zero career hits, which is a sentence. This is a great
Paul
sentence
Skeens?
That like pisses. with zero career hits and plate appearances. Okay. Like with a zero batting average.
All right, sure.
PCA is the man. He is incredibly charismatic. He has become like a character in Cubs land, even though he really has not like performed at the big leagues yet. And that's because he's still a child relatively and hasn't had the opportunity yet. But it is clear that being a Cub like means something to him in a way that like being a member of a team doesn't always mean something to like a top prospect. And for him to come up last year and struggle and like for the team to kind of crumble like it did at the end, I'm sure was really brutal for him. And he was playing kind of terribly in AAA to start this year. And for him to come up after not getting a hit in his very short appearance in the big leagues last year and have his first career hit be a go-ahead ding-dong at Wrigley Field in a day game, which I think is relevant, right, in during a day game, which feels authentically Wrigley. Mm-hmm. And you can see his range of emotions rounding the bases, right? Like in the clip, he's realizing how cool this is. And then he's realizing like, oh, I'm in the major leagues. Like I have to play this cool. And then he's like, no, I don't. Like I'm a child still. This is great. So we love PCA. He's like one of our favorite dudes. Like just a fascinating cat. Very like kind fellow. And to see him get his first taste of shine in the big leagues was undeniably good. But Jordan, what did you actually pick?
Again, lots to choose from. Mason Miller, holy crap, Mason Miller. Lucas Ersig's throwing 100 miles an hour out of the A's pen. Mason Miller's amazing. Gary Sanchez homered off Rolls Chapman. Rocky's amazing comeback. But my good this week, Jake, is Salvador Perez.
Oh my God.
Salvador Perez, who homered.
Put him in the Hall of Fame. Put him in the Hall of Fame right
yesterday.
Now.
I've like hinted at this. People were going to say, what are you talking? His F4 is 28. I will be front and center arguing for this gentleman to be in Cooperstown whenever that day comes. I'm just saying it right now. Okay.
Yeah.
This man is
awesome.
Is so cool. Leading the league in OPS, batting average, and RBIs. He has 7 homers. He has probably my favorite savant page that I've seen in quite a while. He's currently rocking 99th percentile ex woba, ex slug, 96th percentile barrel rate, 92nd percentile hard hit rate, first percentile chase rate. Salvador Perez is going up there and saying, I'm going to swing the bat no matter what you throw. And it doesn't matter. It does not matter. You should not be able to be this productive when you are saying, I'm going to swing at everything. But what really stands out, Jake Mintz, is small sample catcher defense. He's suddenly been an outstanding framer, blocker, and defending the run game, which was not the case last year. You know, he's still revered as a game caller and a game manager by everybody that throws to him. But the physical, because he's gigantic, some of the physical tools as he's gotten older have diminished somewhat. He's just not as agile behind the plate and the framing is not as good because he's gigantic and the physical abilities there are hard.
It's like if an older person like drops their wallet at a restaurant, like you pick it up for them because it's hard to get low.
I don't know how much this is going to sustain in terms of the defense, let alone the offense, But the offense, why not? The dude hit 48 home runs in 2021. He is amazing. Talk to anybody around the game. I was talking to a coach last week about this. Like, it's it catchers. This is the other thing about catcher workload and being available as much as Salvi has been in a way that is ridiculous, is backup catchers are so bad 95% of the time. And I know Freddie Fermin has been hit a little bit, but like the difference between your starter and your backup from an offensive standpoint, normally, let alone sometimes your starter, also is such a big deal that if you can actually be there and play every day, it is just a huge deal. And when you're also being able to slug 626 when you're a 34-year-old catcher is absurd. And he's amazing. He's one of my favorite players. He has been for a while, and it's somehow it's ascended even more in the recent years. Salvador Perez, you are more than good. You are great.
The opposite of good is bad. And you can't talk about bad in this year of our Lord, 2024, without talking about the Chicago White Sox. Oh, what's that sound, Jordan? Do you hear water just kind of swooshing around inside of a bucket and slopped onto the ground? Another one. Mopped. The Sox got mopped. The Sox got mopped again. It is the fourth mop of the season. The White Sox in Mopolis, mini Mopolis, Moppiapolis. They took the White Sox to town. Now we got a text from former podcast producer Bobby Wagner, who said that the White Sox getting mopped shouldn't count as a mop. That like they're such an embarrassing ordeal that it should be a squeegee. Like it's not a full thorough mop.
So it's above a sweep. Like you're still getting some water out and doing some scrubbing, but it's not the full blown. I'm open to that. If the White Sox end up being the worst team in baseball history, like I can understand. Like we've had a lot of discussion about the terminology around the mop and the sweep and the dusting and all these things, and that's fine. I appreciate the creativity. So
yeah,
I appreciate that from Bobby Wagner. But again, four games. The White Sox have now been mopped in their first four game series of the year. They have six left, and it will probably happen again.
Yes, it certainly will. I think my favorite thing about the White Sox, I mean, there's so many funny things about this disaster. So they have three wins, right? Two of them were one-run games, and one was a two-run win. So, like, in wins, they're only plus four runs. Like, their few wins, they're squeakers.
So I believe the Reds, who were 3-22 a few years back, had a minus like 79 or minus 81 run differential. I went back and looked. White Sox are at minus 85 as their 3-22 start. Now, the Reds at that point rattle off like a nice little hot streak that kind of got them back to respectability after they fell to 3-22. Not anticipating that with the White Sox of Chicago, but we will see.
We will need to do a podcast at some point that is basically like, Will they catch the Tigers, the worst team in baseball history? Like, are they in the mix? And I think the answer is yes. We got to dig into it.
That reminds me, there was some, I don't know if it was Fangraphs, but like it was like a headline that was about the White Sox. Okay, yes. Dan Szymborski had this on Fangraphs yesterday, and the headline is, "Can the White Sox lose 120 games?" Which is so funny because it's like it makes it seem like it is an attempt, like they're going for it. You know, it's like I think the question is, will the White Sox lose 120 games versus can they? You know, if they set their mind to it, you know, anything
they sure can. If Andrew Benintendi keeps showing and going,
yeah. My bad was going to be my optimism for Jordan Walker because he got optioned, but you know what? It makes me sad, but it's more sad than bad. So I just wanted to mention that because that is a big deal, but I just want to put
that aside. Think, remember, we got to track this all year. Your Cardinals optimism, my Twins optimism in the Central. I'm looking good after that mop.
If only the Cardinals had the White Sox coming up on the schedule, that would make me feel so much better. I actually got to check that. When do the Cardinals play the White Sox? That would make me feel so much better. No, my bad is just that everybody's hurt. And now that it's not just pitchers, right? I mean, we got guys going down with multiple. We got two rib fractures in the same week. What is going on? We got Bellinger and Cassis, I believe, in the same week. Oh, good news! Cardinals play the White Sox to start May. Yes, it's huge. It's three wins right there. Get them right back in the mix. But like, man, I am just pulling up one of the great Fangraphs resources. It's just the injury report page. Maybe it is like this every year because baseball is hard and people get hurt. It is hard to find a team that is not injured, that doesn't have like one of their 5 to 7 best players hurt. It is a short list. And honestly, just like scrolling through it, eyeballing it.
Can I go off
like
top?
There's like Orioles. 3 or 4 teams where it's like they're not that hurt. Did you say the Orioles?
I mean, the Orioles have Bradish.
Yeah, Bradish, Bautista, and Means. And Hayes is hurt now. So, I mean, Hayes has been terrible. So, yeah, bad answer. I'm including guys that like have been like out, right? Not just guys that have gone down, like guys that were already out, right?
I see.
I mean, the only teams that aren't missing like a top 5 to 10 player are like the Tigers, the Phillies. Because we know Taiwan Walker is not one of their best players at this point. The Phillies have been very healthy. The Royals have been generally healthy. But other than that, man, like Toronto, I know Kiermaier is out now, but they've generally been healthy, and we certainly can't count Alec Manoa. So it's just wild. And now with Bellinger going, like, it's every team. There's someone, at least a couple of their best players that are out, and it's just exhausting. And I guess the reason I bring that up is because so much of our discourse around so many of these teams, whether they're off to good starts or bad starts, is, oh, well, but then they have this guy hurt, and they have this guy hurt. And fans be like, oh, they, as an excuse, it's like, well, okay, but just wait till this guy gets back. And like, that's true, but generally, outside of 3 or 4 teams, your team is probably missing someone really important. And so, which is why the teams that aren't, they should really be appreciating this time and making the most of it, because they'll probably, not only will the other teams in theory get healthier, but also you will probably, you know, lose someone at some point here soon.
Ugla.
So, what you got?
I went and saw the Dodgers in New York. Nope. Went and saw the Dodgers in Washington, D.C. last 2 days. And being around Dodgerland is its own bizarre experience. It is a circus. It is hilarious and important relatively. And it is all of these things. The Dodgers are the most, they're the team this year, right? And just to like be in the mix of that is a very unique kind of deal. Now, I want to uglify one moment from the last 2 days.
Please do.
Jordan, I just sent you the video that I took of this experience. If you want to just watch it for your own sake on your phone, it's pretty great. So Shohei Ohtani, who everyone is familiar with, you know about him, he spoke. Okay, he did a press conference, like a little stand-up. Jordan is already laughing at the video. Okay, he did a stand-up press conference in like the tunnel hallway outside the locker room. And now the big problem with any Shohei Ohtani press conference is really, well, with like a lot of press conferences, and it's more of a problem when there's a translator, is when the translator is whispering. And like for Ohtani, because there's like 50 media people, what Ipe did this, and Ireton does this now too, is he's so quiet. Like his response is just in the microphone, and he's like right here, he's very measured and he's quiet, and you can't hear him. Like if you're in the back of the scrum, like you literally just cannot hear the answers. It's like, why are we doing these scrums if you can't hear? Now, the reason this is ugly is like we're in the tunnel and Ohtani is talking and he's being asked about like going to Toronto this week, because you remember with the plane and the Dodgers are going there. And there is this woman who is like part of like the Nats catering staff, like some kind lady, is like wheeling just an enormous cart, like a wheelie tray of what I think is like coffee, right?
Yeah, like, it looks like some beverages.
Some big beverage containers. But what's important is like these are metal beverage containers, and so they're very loud. They're like rattling. And she's pushing this cart down this echoey hallway, and it is making so much noise. Like so much noise. And as like this $700 million person is talking for like one of the 3 times he does in a week, okay? And like no one can hear anything that Ohtani is saying. At least I can't. And this poor woman is just trying to do her job and is just walking so slowly like past everybody.
She's doing her job, yeah. And she's doing her job where she's supposed to be doing her job, right? Like this is what the tunnel is for, is for the stadium workers to move the stuff around. Like that's normally what it is. But because they don't want to do, there's not enough room for all the Ohtani media in even the dugout or in the clubhouse, this is what you end up with, which is just so funny.
It's so absurd, right? Because no one is really doing anything wrong. It's just like, just, and you know, everyone else was like trying to do their jobs and get the audio of Otani. And I just had a player who was like, this is dumb. I'm going to take a video of this poor woman rolling these loud trays down this echoey hallway while Otani is speaking. It was so ugly. I loved it. I will never forget that moment.
That's great. My ugly this week belongs in good, but it's ugly enough that I'm putting it in ugly. Jake, you might have seen, although I'm feeling pretty good that you didn't see this last night because you were driving and you weren't on Twitter. Do you know anything about Matt Wilkinson?
No.
Okay. No. Great. That was what I was hoping. Matt Wilkinson last night for the Lynchburg Hillcats in the Cleveland Guardians organization pitched 6 innings, allowed 0 hits, 1 walk with 15 strikeouts. Okay. An absolutely marvelous day for Matt Wilkinson. Okay. Left-handed pitcher Matt Wilkinson. It is a continuation of what has been an amazing start to the season for Matt Wilkinson, where he was already dominating. And now his season line in 4 starts in low A is 41 strikeouts in 20 and two-thirds innings across 4 starts. He has allowed 1 run, and he has 6 walks. Matt Wilkinson is 6'1", 270 pounds. And Matt Wilkinson's nickname is Tugboat. And Tugboat Wilkinson, who is a 10th round pick out of Central Arizona Junior College last year. This is no carnival act, Jake. Tugboat Wilkinson last year was the junior college pitcher of the year at Central Arizona. Tugboat
Wilkinson is no carnival act, Jake.
Tugboat Wilkinson last year at one of the better junior college programs, Central Arizona, had a 1.07 ERA in 84 innings with 136 strikeouts. And you think, is Tugboat up there throwing absolute cheese? No. Fastball's around 90. But the dude knows how to pitch. All this lad has done, this Canadian from Alberta, okay? He's from Alberta. All he has done is get outs. He's done it in summer leagues. He did it on the Cape. He did it in junior college. And the Guardians took him in the 10th round. And all he is doing is getting more outs. And you might look and say, oh my God, ha, Tugboat. And this is what's ugly about it. All he's done is get outs. And he still lasted to the 10th round. And the Guardians were the team that were like, hello, like, we can get this guy to get outs. we get pitchers with way worse numbers to get outs. We can get Tugboat Wilkinson to get outs.
That's a big boy. He's tugging that boat for
it's
sure.
It's a big boy. For those wondering, this is on the MLB story about him. Tugboat got his nickname. Was given to him by a family friend after seeing him run around the bases at a pace he thought was similar to that of the boat designed to tow larger vessels. So,
yep.
Tugboat now no longer has to run the bases because all he's doing is he's on the mound and he's getting outs and he's making the world happy. So, cheers to you, Mr. Wilkinson. I wish you all the success in the world. I hope that I am there in Cleveland for Tugboat's major league debut at some point in the next few seasons.
For Tugboat's maiden voyage. I mean, the name Tugboat Wilkinson, he sounds like a Confederate Civil War general who defected to the North, who's like from like the banks of the Mississippi River and was I gotta tug this North. And
this is the thing. He's been living with this nickname his whole life. Now, we're not quite at the level where like that's what it says on his baseball reference page, right? Like that's the ultimate level is if it ends up as his official roster name, which it isn't yet. But this is what everyone's calling him. And this is the last part about this. This is what absolutely kills me. So this is the press release for him winning Junior College Pitcher of the Year. Okay. Last June. Head coach Anthony Gilich, his head coach on Wilkinson, quote, Tug had an unbelievable year for us, and he has been doing that his whole life. Tug was dominant every outing of the season. Even when he didn't have his best stuff, this is his pitching coach, he was so fun to be around everyday practice with a sense of humor and a determination to get better. He loved his teammates, wanted to win for them, and is as selfless of a superstar as you will ever find. So I couldn't be more all in.
Tug that boat.
Yeah, because like, listen, I think we as a baseball fan, like we definitely collectively spent too much time freaking out about players that are, you know, a little tubbier than others. I think that Bartolo went over the top, right? But I'm sorry. If you're going to roll into pro ball with the tugboat nickname, like I am going to be all the way in. So rooting for this guy and excited to see what he does next.
All right, Jordan.
Yeah.
That's it.
We did it. We did it, Joe. Jake, there's a weekend of baseball coming up. The Houston Astros, quickly weekend preview before we say goodbye. The Houston Astros are going to Mexico City. They are playing two games against the Colorado Rockies. They do not play on Friday. They play Saturday and Sunday. These are the two, I mean, the White Sox are just as, definitely worse, but two of the worst pitching staffs in baseball going to a, every time any baseball is played there, we saw it with the Padres and Giants last year, the offense is going to be out of control. I'm glad they have Fromber going and Blanco. Thank God. Oh my goodness. Thank goodness it's not going to be... poor Spencer Arrighetti trying to get outs in Mexico City. But this is both an opportunity and a potential chance for an even worse continuation of this Astros start to the season. We'll see.
They're playing on the moon. The air is thin. These games are going to be 21 win by two. Take the over. They'll have the runs. Remember last year when the Giants played here, they also got the runs. In a different way. Yeah. But yes, that will be something to keep an eye on. I will be at Citi Field this weekend watching the St. Louis Cardinals, trying to figure out what the heck that is.
Okay, good. Maybe you'll get some eyes. Let me know how, if I need to jump off or if they can kind of turn it around. I know the Mets have been, you know, a little bit up and down. But that'll definitely be a good one. And then the Yankees are in Milwaukee. We kind of spared you Yankees fans too much talk about how poopy their offense has looked. But let's see if they can score some runs against Colin Ray, and see if they can slow down William Contreras, maybe the best catcher in baseball. So that's a fun little prove it series. In terms of best records, we got Guardians, Braves, and Yankees, Brewers this weekend, which is really Dude. Cool. So those will both be kind of
Guardians, Braves is such a great prove it series. Like if they go and beat the Braves like 2 out of 3, I'm like, then the way that it's so stupid, right? Because it's like, if they take 2 out of 3 against the Braves, I'm like, oh, I'm all the believe in the Guardians. They take one, I'm like, ha, they're not real. And it's just one game is the difference.
I'm also excited for Royals Tigers. Of course, we've been comparing these teams all season, and this will be the first time they are playing this year. So that'll be nice to see, you know, which of those teams we should believe in more. And then tonight, I just got to say, in terms of pitching matchups, Imanaga, Cutter Crawford. Both of these guys have been two of the best starting pitchers in the league so far this year. You know, the Red Sox just keep getting weird, bad injury news, but Cutter Crawford has certainly been a bright spot. So excited to see that one. But anything else before we say goodbye?
Yeah, I mean, Ohtani's going to Toronto, so I'm fascinated to see whether he's going to get booed or what. Yeah. I mean, Dave Roberts when he talked yesterday was like, I hope he doesn't get booed. Like, he didn't do anything, right? It was just reports.
Unfortunately, that's not how booing works.
I understand, but like, it's funny, right? Yeah. Because Ohtani, like, this happened to him. And then when asked about it, he was like, I loved playing in Toronto. Like, what a great group of fans up there. What a beautiful city. And then he's just going to walk in and they're going to boo him out of the building. What a stupid sport we have. I love it.
Yeah. And then the other thing with that series is Glasnow Kikuchi on Saturday. Kikuchi has been sneaky fantastic since the middle of last season. He's been really, really fun.
I got to say, Jordan.
Awesome. Yeah.
I'm in love.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm getting married.
Yeah.
My beautiful fiance is out of town for 2 weeks.
Oh, boy. Congratulations.
And I will both miss her dearly. And I am very excited this weekend to just mainline ball. Like, I am going to watch so much ball.
You know, normally.
She was like, what are you going to do? Like, how are you going to fill your time?
What am I going to do?
What do you mean?
I'm going to lock in for Jordan Hicks and Martin Perez, because that was not a game I normally would have had time for.
I'm going to be like charting at my desk, okay, is what I'm going to do. She's like, did you make, do you have plans Friday, Saturday night? Mm-hmm. Yes. With who? With me.
With the chart. With the Baseball Savant game feed is who I will be spending my time with. All right.
We'll see how I am at the end of the 2 weeks, Jordan, whether I still have this energy or whether I just, you know, miss the warm embrace of the woman I love. Stay tuned on Baseball Barbercast to find out.
Safe to say that our weekend recap on Monday will be very thorough. So thank you all for listening. Thank you, Andrew Hartz, for producing as always. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Enjoy the ball this weekend. And we will.
The weekend recap is going to be like, you know, I really like the way Alec Marsh was like mixing in his, you know, or like he was, I love the way his fastball was working against Tigers hitters. Thought that was good. It's going to be like 2 hours long.
Alec Marsh is hurt, unfortunately. So get your Michael Walker prep in order.
Dang.
All right. Thank you all for listening. Goodbye.